Hello, my name is Ben Burrell and welcome back to Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that takes an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording, record by record. Thanks for joining us for episode 2 of season 2. If you missed the first episode of this season on Time Out of Mind, you can listen back to that and all our previous episodes on bobdylanpodcast.com. And I ask you for the millionth time, if you are listening via an app that allows you to rate the podcast, please do give us 5 stars or 4 stars. That's more than appreciated. Let's crack on with looking at an album that is fascinating, and it marks yet another change in Bob's sound, something we've become used to in this period, but it was also a backdrop to a hugely altering personal life for Bob as well. This is 1978's Street Legal.
I think we better talk this over. Maybe when we both get sober, you'll understand I'm only a man.
On paper, this record has everything going for it. Bob had the winds in his sail from Blood on the Tracks, a position he'd only strengthened with its follow-up Desire, not to mention the Basement Tapes being placed in the middle, which was slowly becoming the music fan's Dylan record. He should be in confident mood here. However, all of this was undermined by his personal life. Around this time, he'd finally separated from then-wife Sarah, a saga that had been played out over the last couple of album cycles. It would end in an apparent violent altercation as she discovered another woman round the breakfast table with her husband and children, leading to a quick, and we assume expensive, divorce. He would also be working on his ill-fated directorial debut film, as well as building his Malibu compound, both at yet more considerable expense. All of this was a big transition in his life, and this record appears to track that. There's certainly a feeling of transition and change running throughout the lyrics over the album's 50-minute and 18-second runtime. This situation was compounded when Bob's world was rocked by the death of Elvis. This was clearly a huge deal for Dylan. He says after the news broke, "I went over my whole life. I went over my whole childhood. I didn't speak to anyone for a week." He even muted the idea of doing an Elvis-like tour with uniforms and a sprawling band, and you can't help but feel that he definitely does influence the record's sound. There's more of a commercial undercurrent to it than, say, Desire. While it doesn't specifically sound like Elvis, it's more of a singer's album than you find elsewhere in Bob's back catalogue. Take track 5, Is Your Love in Vain, for example. After the opening riff, it sounds like Neil Diamond is about to step up to the microphone, not Bob Dylan.
This
is what this record has in abundance, melody. It's something that's not really Bob's USP, but here he leans on it. In fact, this could be his most melodic record, something that is aided by the other big tempo on this album, the brass section. Once again, you have to give it to Bob. In the space of 3 years, he's gone from that acoustic singer-songwriter sound with Blood on the Tracks, to a wide sonic landscape in Desire, to here jumping ship yet again to this brass-bound sound. For the most part, it works. The brass is employed well and is aided by some excellent backing vocals from, in part, his second wife, Carolyn Dennis. This is something we get on the album opener, Changing of the Guards. 'In hindsight, this song maps out everything for us. It gives us a glimpse into the religious period, which is just around the corner, with its biblical references and born-again-style backing vocals. The lyrics are, it's fair to say, quite difficult to diffuse the meaning of. They're not meant to be viewed as a linear story, another shift from Desire, and at times feel more like a collection of images. Dylan biographer Clinton Halen says Bob was quoted on this song saying, "I don't know where these songs come from. Sometimes I'm thinking to some other strange age that I've lived through." And the song's historical elements appear to back that up, almost like Dylan is dreaming out loud, thinking of different lives that he might have lived. He sings, "Fortune calls. I stepped forth from the shadows to the marketplace. Merchants and thieves hungry for power, my last deal gone down. She's smelling sweet like the meadows where she was born on a summer's eve near the tower."
Yeah.
whole song defines the album's main lyrical thread of transition very early on. It also acts as a log of Dylan's shifting personal life, culminating with that titular line, "Your hearts must have the courage for the changing of the guards." It could also be seen as a song that addresses Dylan's changing career. The song starts with the line, 16 years. This album was released 16 years after his first, and later he sings about fortune calling, which is something he's mentioned many times with regards to his career. And that penultimate verse even sounds like an artist who is rallying against the suits as Bob sings, "I don't need your organisation, I've shined your shoes. I've moved your mountains and marked your cards." Listening back to this song now, it sums up my entire feeling on this record. I like it, and I like it a lot, but I don't feel a massive connection to it. It could be because the lyrics are more ambiguous than the preceding albums, or Dylan's performance is more placid, shall we say. But for me, there's a real lack of Bob speaking from the heart, which is usually where we find him at his best. And it would appear that I'm not alone. Reviews for this record were less than impressive in the US, and while it's softened in recent years, it's not budged the dial too much. In the UK, the vibe was different. Michael Watts of Melody Maker proclaimed it Dylan's best album since John Wesley Harding. I mean, I completely disagree, but I feel it really found an audience in my home country. What I do connect with here, though, is the music. And on this opening track, Bob wrote a killer riff. It's something that he uses well, too. He leads us up to the break, which we think is going to see that riff kick in when he sings, "The Captain is down, but still believing." Then he pulls back, delivering the next verse, starting with "They shaved her head," building even more expectation before finally giving us the release with that riff at the end of this verse. "They shaved her head. This isn't the only riff that shines on the album. On track 3, No Time to Think, it almost has a classical feeling to it. It wouldn't sound out of place being played by a string section having been written by Vivaldi. Coming in at a lengthy 8 minutes and 20 seconds, just like Changing of the Guards, this has a widescreen scope to it. There's also some possible references to Dylan's marriage, most notably its opening lines. These lyrics seem to be hinting at Bob's personal life as he sings, "In death you face life with a child and a wife who sleepwalks through your dreams into walls. You're a soldier of mercy, you're cold and you curse. He who cannot be trusted must fall." It goes even deeper later on the fourth bridge as Dylan sings, "Paradise, sacrifice, mortality, reality. But the magician is quicker, and his game is much thicker than blood and blacker than ink, and there's no time to think." "Paradise, sacrifice, mortality, reality. But the magician is quicker, and his game is much thicker than blood. Bob addressing his career alongside his family life. Those first lines in this section appear to list conflicting feelings of being a singer in the limelight whilst also being a family man. For Bob, both were complicated at this time. His family was falling apart and his career was in the middle of a huge resurgence. Here he likens himself to a magician calling his game thicker than blood, possibly alluding to his career taking up most of his time and energy away from his family. Musically, there's a lot to like. That descending melody that we've witnessed a few times in this podcast series is present once again, becoming Bob's almost secret trademark. And it's rich enough that it means we never miss the absence of a chorus, which is actually replaced with that sax riff acting as the hook. However, the sonics here aren't the best. In fact, they're pretty thin. That sax sound begs to have a full-bodied approach a la Baker Street, especially with that poppy melody behind it. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying Bob should have employed Jerry Rafferty on production duties, but it does feel like a bit of a misfire on this particular track. The production duties, or Captain in Charge, as it's listed in the liner notes, went to Don DeVito, who served in the chair for Desire. Bob apparently wasn't happy with the DeVito sound on Desire, but through lack of a better option, re-employs him here. Like seemingly every recording session we've covered on this series, the sessions were a bit of a mess. After some personal changes and rehearsal sessions, Dylan signed a 5-year lease on a 3-story building on the corner of Ocean and Main in Santa Monica, dubbed Rundown. At Rundown, it was clear he wanted to change things up from the previous records right at the start. Session player David Mansfield recalls being told to put his slide guitar away, surprising given it was a former staple for Bob. Dylan began recording his new material with his touring band. Still at Rundown, he rented a mobile truck to help proceedings. The mobile truck was equipped with 24-track capabilities, something his studio didn't have. Dylan's quoted as saying, "I didn't want to do it there. I couldn't find the right producer, but it was necessary to do it, so we just brought in the remote truck and cut it and went for that live sound." And that sound really suffers, in my opinion, most notably on track 2, New Pony. In this song, we hear lyrics that concern a femme fatale mentioned in that opening gambit about Lucifer, but also a quick turnover of relationships as our narrator mentions new and exciting partners, or ponies. Sex is everywhere in this song. Vividly in that line towards the end, "Come over here, pony, I want to climb up one time on you." Should be a really exciting, almost edgy song, but it falls short. It's a little on the repetitive side, and there's a lack of clever moments to give the song depth, continuing those production problems from No Time to Think. This is a recurring issue on this record, so much so that in 1999, Don DeVito remixed the album to correct some of the mistakes. It rights some wrongs, but it's only ever papering over cracks, leading us to feel that, not for the first time, this is a missed opportunity. There's the basis for a classic album here. The songs are there, but it never seems to come off. We can't solely blame the DeVito production, which actually contains some good ideas for the most part. The recording and actual capture of the sound feels more than a little off, though. Perhaps Dylan's personal life caused a loss of focus, or perhaps the chaotic studio sessions ruined the vibe. Whatever it is, you feel that magic is definitely missing. Take track 8, for example, "We Better Talk This Over." It once again is very likeable, the melody is good, with a proper top line, and the backing singers accentuate that perfectly, but it's never really a knockout for me. This situation can only get rougher. Why should we needlessly suffer? Let's call it a day, go our own different ways before we decay. You don't have to be afraid of looking into my face. Help but feel the opening lines are referencing his relationship as he sings, "I think we better talk this over. Maybe when we both get sober, you'll understand I'm only a man doing the best I can." And later, we hear lines of, "You've been two-faced. You've been double-dealing. I feel displaced. I got a low-down feeling. You've been two-faced. You've been double-dealing. I took a chance, got caught in a trance of a downhill." The same lyrical themes are repeated in track 7, "True Love Tends to Forget," and once again there's a real lack of goosebumps in this song. I'm getting weary, looking in my baby's eyes when she's near. this song again has a more than likable melody, and that production is built on big pop hooks, which sound great. The lyrics are possibly another nod to Dylan's kaput marriage, as he sings, "I'm getting weary looking in my baby's eyes. When she's near me, she's so hard to recognise." Despite all its good points, this song really fails to hit the spot for me. Of course, this is a personal preference, and by now I think we can all agree this is a really divisive Dylan record. But being divisive doesn't mean there isn't some stunning moments to be found here. The aforementioned Changing of the Guards being an obvious standout choice, but also track 4, Is Your Love in Vain, creates a special moment on the album. I think what I like best here is Bob's delivery. It finally sounds like it's coming from his heart. By the end of the song, it sounds like he's bearing his soul to us whilst taking off his mask to a lover, asking them to accept him as he sings, "Are you willing to risk it all, or is your love in vain?" There has been some criticism of the lyrics in this song, saying they could be construed as misogynistic. And whilst I'm not here to defend any of Bob's words or actions, I will say this is a song written from the point of view of a narrator, not an interview about the man's ideology. Regardless of those lyrics, what we do have here is an atmosphere that is lacking on a lot of other tracks. It creates a mood that really informs Bob's delivery. This is something that also happens even more so on the record's centrepiece. Listen to this opening tense ambience. For me, it's the creative peak of the record. Senor, senor, do you know? For this song, Dylan said he was inspired by a man he saw on a train ride from Mexico to San Diego. He's quoted as saying, "He must have been 150 years old, with both eyes burning, there was smoke coming out of his nostrils." I think he might have been over-egging the pudding there, but it's true to say that in 1978, he did see a strange mystical old man get on a train, and Dylan felt the urge to talk to him, but never did, and regretted it. Away from that, the theories as to what the song is actually about are varied to say the least. Some see Signor as a Jesus-like figure that Dylan is seeking answers from. Others replace Jesus with death itself, and some see this as a more straightforward political song about America's foreign policy, given the subtitle. Personally, I see it as a combination of all three. Bob is definitely looking for answers in this song. The questions are endless, and they're big questions too. It would appear he's also addressing them to a higher power sparked by that man on the train who comes to represent something otherworldly that Dylan can't speak to except via this song. He poses these questions right from the off, singing, "Señor, señor, can you tell me where we're heading? Lincoln County Road or Armageddon? Seems like I've been down this way before. Is there any truth in that, señor?" It appears he's looking for answers about the future from an anxious state of mind, which isn't a million miles away from that young man who sang about World War III a decade earlier. Señor, señor, can you tell me where we're heading? Lincoln County Road or Armageddon? Seem like I've been down this way before. Is there any truth in that, señor? That line, "seems like I've been down this way before," has a tired feeling to it. Almost like he's saying, "I've sung about Armageddon so many times before, do I still have to keep readdressing this issue?" Over the next verses, we get a dystopian scene painted for us. Bob sings about a gypsy with a broken flag and a flashing ring. This continues with that brilliant line, "Son, this ain't a dream no more, it's the real thing." That broken flag and ring image gives us the impression of an America that has lost its way to the wealthy in this dystopian nightmare that actually turns out to be a reality. And while this broken scene could be Dylan looking round at the world he's in, it could also be a reflection of his own personal dystopia. Regardless, by the end, he's calling for revolution, adding to the album's transition theme, almost like he's rallying himself out of the situation with that final verse of "Signor, signor, let's overturn these tables, disconnect these cables. This place don't make sense to me no more. Can you tell me what we're waiting for, signor?
Signor, let's overturn these tables, disconnect.
Throughout this song, we deviate from the album's 70s brass-bound sound, especially here on the chorus with that great tremolo guitar line. It's Bob's delivery that really shines here. And once again, you don't feel that happens on every single track. However, the feat is repeated on the verses of Baby Stop Crying. Bob is delivering lines whilst it feels like he's looking you dead in the eyes.
You've been down to the bottom with a bad man, babe. But you're back where you belong.
Don't get me wrong, this song is not a world beater, but there's an intimacy here that is in short supply on Street Legal. It's once again quite a commercial sounding song, and Bob feels like he's crooning almost into the microphone, coming to a head with that "tearing up my mind" line. Bob's delivery is also the scene stealer on the album closer, "Where Are You Tonight? Journey Through Dark Heat." Like a lot of Dylan album closers, it plays out like a final scene in a movie, wrapping things up. It's reflective with a tinge of sadness to it, but it's also strangely positive in its way. He sings, "And she winds back the clock and she turns back the page of a book that no one can write. Oh, where are you tonight?"
And she winds back.
Nice small production elements thrown into the track too, especially with the use of those bongo drums at the start, but again, it doesn't go as far as you want it to. And that's also the case with the lyrics to a lesser degree. Whilst there's hints to Dylan's marriage throughout the album, it's not as overt as Blood on the Tracks or, say, Desire's album closer Sarah. If you believe Dylan when he says Blood on the Tracks is not autobiographical, then this should really be listed as the real breakup album. And perhaps this is more of a real-life, less dramatic depiction of heartbreak. And on this particular track, it does feel like it's a very personal story, something found in the opening lines of, "There's a long-distance train rolling through the rain, tears on my letter that I write. There's a woman I long to touch and I miss her so much, but she's drifting like a satellite."
There's a long-distance train rolling through the rain, tears on the letter I write. There's a woman I long to touch and I'm missing her so much, but she's drifting like a satellite.
Whilst those incredible lyrics from Blood on the Tracks were steeped in sepia tone with a novel-like existence, these lyrics feel a little bit less elegantly sad and possibly more real. Even as the record is coming to an end, there's still a feeling of transition and things being up in the air before finally, towards the end of the song, we get some closure with the lines of, "There's a new day at dawn and I've finally arrived. If I'm there in the morning, baby, you'll know I've survived. I can't believe it, I can't believe I'm alive. But without you, it just doesn't seem right. Oh, where are you tonight?"
There's a new day at dawn, and I finally arrived. If I'm a baby in the morning, baby, you'll know I'm survived. I can't believe it, I can't believe I'm alive. But without you, it doesn't seem right. Oh, where are you tonight?
We only really get half a conclusion at the end of the song, as we're still left with a question and a hope of survival rather than a confirmation of it, as Dylan sings, "If I'm Still Here in the Morning. It's interesting that we finish this record on a question. Questions are all over the album, whether it's their constant presence in a song like Signor or in Is Your Love in Vain. The questioning in this album really plays into that unsettled transitional theme, something that is still going on here in the final moments of the record. This album is a bridge in so many ways. It moved on Bob's sound once again, almost preparing us for that next stop of gospel. It also said goodbye to his first wife and employed his second, and whilst it has its faults, it has its great moments too. It's often considered one of Bob's middling albums, but in hindsight, without it, his back catalogue would be much less interesting.
Baby, please stop crying. Stop crying. Stop crying.
Stop crying.
Baby, please stop crying.
Stop crying.
Stop crying.
Stop crying.
Baby, please stop crying.
That's it for episode 2 of season 2. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed. If you want to keep up to date with what's happening next and where we're going with episode 3, then follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Bob Dylan Podcast is where you can find us there. And don't forget, you can listen back to any of the shows at bobdylanpodcast.com. Until next time, thank you once again for listening and goodbye.